I might say you were in a state of stress, and I was in a state of tension, which gives a good foundation for the discussion of the morning. We are much interested in these days in trying to do something to change the ways that are destroying our way of life. Every day the papers have reports of new and useful reforms, most of which do not work. They do not work because if they would work, we'd be using them already if we liked them. But they interfere with us. They make us do things we ought to do, and that is a very serious mistake. No political party will ever succeed with that as a slogan. So we take the problems of today and we say, what is the cause of stress? Well, stress is a misuse of something. When we use energy correctly, we have proper function. When we mix up things or make a serious mistake, we get stress. Stress may be the right thing in the wrong place, or it may be the wrong thing in the right place. But it's not where it belongs at that moment, and it is not doing the job it was supposed to do. And wherever stress appears, it's a symptom. It's a symptom that means correction is indicated. Stress gives us warning. Stress in the body can produce pain, which gives us warning. But wherever there is discomfort in this universe, we must finally decide that man is responsible for it. Nature did not cause the discomfort. Living things in various orders, becoming in one way or another maladjusted, which results in pain, stress, and the misfortunes we worry about. Now today we are in the worst problem of stress, I suppose, in the history of the world. Now what is it? Is it a rate of vibration? What is this thing that is contagious and infectious and runs through nation after nation and brings the whole conglomerate into trouble? It is vibration. There's no question about that. Vibrations of one kind or another striking other vibrations which are not suitable or compatible become involved in conflicts of one kind or another. The reason we are in the mess we are in is because we are out of step with the plan. We are not doing what we're supposed to do. We are not taking care of ourselves as we are supposed to. We are misusing the natural resources that come to us as we are not supposed to. And in one way or another, we are, in a sense, delinquents. Delinquent as a group. A delinquent civilization. A delinquent order of life. What we call humanity is really a delinquent order of life. Something that seems to insist on doing things wrong. Now we can say that that's an exaggeration. That a lot of people are doing things right. But when we look into it carefully, we find that the people who are doing it right are not very well known and not very numerous. But the people who are doing it wrong are very famous and are very, very numerous. And they keep on being numerous, and they make new rules and new laws and new covenants so that they can continue to be delinquent. Now, it would seem that the average person coming into a country which he is not native to would do what we do when we visit foreign countries here. The first thing we try to do is to find a little textbook so that we can ask and answer simple questions. Then we try to study about the country a little bit, what its customs are. We don't want to insult or injure somebody. We do not want to appear to be unpleasant. So we do all ways that we can to do little things that make us pleasant in that country. And we probably get along pretty well, and of course, fairly, honestly, we are all the time looking for bargains. Bargains was really probably what took us there in the first place. It wasn't love of scenery. Well, we caught a little scenery along with the bargains, and all went well. Now, when we come into this world by birth, We are coming into a strange realm. Perhaps we've been here many times before, but we've forgotten it. There is nothing that we learned long ago that is immediately available to us. We have to search memory and recapitulate some of the happenings in order to make ourselves adjustable to the new situations. So we come in new and ready, and we immediately begin not by becoming strangers and by trying to learn the ways of this country, which is going to be our host for a while. We come in with only one thought in our minds: to change the country. The country must do what we expect it to do. It must do just what we want. It must give special priority to everything that we like. And most of all, it would be honest when dealing with us, not necessarily all the rest of the time. So we come in here to take over something that we know nothing about. And we've been doing that from the dawn of time. We have come in as mental giants. We have come in as capable of ruling everything. And we have settled down to imposing our own laws upon a world that has laws of its own. Natural law is inevitable. Human law is usually in trouble. We go back to the very beginning of all this, we find various codes of law, like the codes of Hammurabi and the codes of Justinian. We find that in ancient times men created codes. Now, the earliest of these codes was probably the most honorable. We would consider them the most primitive. We don't think of those codes anymore because they demanded honesty, and that was a mistake. We don't do that when we're really building something for ourselves. Mistakes are for other people, and we want to profit from them. We do not want to change our own ways. But in any event, we have these ancient codes, and they tell us very simply, keep the rules and they'll keep you. Break the rules and the rules will break you. But we're not following that line of thought. We are doing everything we can think of to create systems for evading facts. Finding that the truth is too uncomfortable to endure, we've got to change the truth, not ourselves. We must continue to find ways to doing what we will and want to do in a universe that says we have to do and be what it wants us to do and be. We are not here to change the universe. We are here to grow up. The child that goes to school is not here to build a new schoolhouse. He's there to take the instruction that has come to him. Now, in the days that have gone by, we had plenty of opportunity, going back 5,000 or 10,000 years, to find out what happens when we're foolish. We've all watched and read about civilizations and cultures and individuals and families that did it wrong. We know the trouble they got into. We know the tragedies that they caused. And we also know that we have inherited a great deal of misery from their mistakes. But it never occurs to us to realize that there were rules to start with that we should have been giving thought to, that we should really have been attempting to understand and apply. So we keep on making our own little rules, and we keep on getting in trouble with them. But if we wanted to make the major rules, the changes that would straighten it out, it would cause us to do things that we really don't want to do. We do not want to cooperate. We want to compete. We do not want to rejoice in the well-being of others. That we want them to participate in the process of taking care of our well-being. All the way along, each individual considers himself the object of major consideration. He wants to do it his way. He thinks the world should permit him to do it his way. He thinks if he wants to take over somebody's country, he can do it if he has physical strength great enough to permit it. Where moral and integrity come in, there's no interest. So we have managed in the course of the last 5,000 years to get ourselves into a very difficult situation. We are in a condition in which we have catered to ourselves for so long that the possibility of not catering to ourselves is cataclysmic. It's going to be the most difficult thing in the world. But as it stands today, we are in the midst of the mistakes we have made, and the effect upon us is called stress. Now, how are we going to understand this in some way of ameliorating the situation? How are we going to get the stress out of our systems? Well, we have all kinds of ways. Our physician can give us some good remedies, guaranteed, to take the stress away for 5 years and take our life away for the rest of time. We are going to sacrifice a little. We may give up our favorite brand of cigarettes, and that's a big sacrifice. That really is something. We're really afraid when we do that. And we find other things, cut down a little on the bourbon, do all these kind of things, be a little bit uncomfortable. And if we get just so that we don't like what we're doing, maybe we'll be able to survive. Because survival seems to depend upon following rules we don't want to obey. So we keep on exploring the matter a little further. We can go back in history. There's plenty of histories available. We can go back now in art and music and literature, history, philosophy, anthropology, science, and find out all kinds of things about what human beings are doing and have done. And we can also find and learn from this that those who have kept the rules have done the best, but they very often have never been able to be heard to tell the story because they have been eliminated for interfering with the destinies of people who don't want to keep rules. So most of the great rule keepers of time have been martyrs, destroyed by the foolish, to perpetuate the folly of people who did not want to think. So we have stress building up, and in the 20th century we have gone to the highest point of stress ever known. Stress plus ingenuity and individual initiative, scientific knowledge, all types of research and so forth, all these things added together not only bring us advancements in knowledge, but they bring us tremendous compoundings of stress. Here we are. We know what we can do. We know what the atomic bomb can do. We strongly suspect what nation is going to get it next. We're very certain that it is going to be loosened by somebody. And so we keep on going quietly along, preparing as much as we can for the worst, but never for a moment trying to change the worst. If the nations of the world would get together, say no more bombs, there'd be no more bombs. But if that happened, then ambitious tyrants, little dictators, and munition manufacturers would be very unhappy. Well, they must not be allowed to suffer like that. We must do what they want to, and let God take care of them, which He will do. In the end, all of these munition manufacturers are going to be destroyed by their own inventions. But that is the way it goes, and stress builds up. And here we are today with stress in every field of life. All of this stress because every field of life that we know of has become infected with the primary mistakes which have descended from time immemorial, both of the now and the past. And proverbially, probably also the future, are interested primarily in wealth, fame, and economy of building up great mercantile organizations. In other words, wealth is a science of industry. Wealth is an accumulation of the spoils of war. Wealth as the result of stealing one person's land and giving it to somebody else. All of these things add together to wealth or fame, and these are success. And success is something that if it costs 10,000 lives on the right hand and 10,000 lives on the left hand, if one man is successful through all this, it makes it all worthwhile. The dead will never complain. So we have this. And the stress is beginning to worry us. Now, some stress is dangerous. All of it is more or less dangerous, but some is really dangerous. And some is sort of primarily dangerous and largely ridiculous. The stress that we have in the arts and in education and in music and in these areas of the so-called cultural activities are really more or less ridiculous, because there's not any case in which the new forms are equal to the old ones. We go now to the theater and we watch something that is miserably performed by people who know very little about theater or care less, and receive enormous salaries for doing it badly. This is unpleasant. But we can all stay home. We can stay home and listen to the television, and that's still more unpleasant. So we don't have much choice unless we want to pay $50 for a seat to go and watch a ball game. It's all very foolish. And altogether, it's making people tired. It's making them sick. Now, we know from nutrition and from the new sciences of dietetics and so forth that the individual who is emotionally distraught, who is psychologically disturbed, and who is physically underprivileged and undernourished is not going to be healthy. And out of the lack of health comes a series of things that are not just simply toxic in the sense of digestion. Out of this sickness-like condition of the majority of our people, the world, is coming a sickness of life, a sickness of mind, a loss of values, a destruction of morale, and gradually we are destroying ourselves by destroying the integrities which make our survival possible. We are destroying the human race because we are neglecting the things that make the human race live. The human race does not live by the grace of God, except not essentially. It lives by the intelligence, common sense, and integration of people. That we live because we keep the rules of living. When we break those rules, we threaten our own survival. And no one seems to care much about this. We hear a lot of objections, but we kind of feel underneath that it'll all take care of itself. We may not have any more trees, but that's a minor disorder. We don't realize that those trees are really very important. They're simply basic, nothing now but newspaper print on, with the roots still on. We do not understand that when we exchange all these things, neglect the right things, and do the wrong things, that we become sick. We are sick of worrying, because worry causes desperate action. And desperate action can lead a peaceful people into war and massacre. We are also miserable because wrong actions upsets our economic balance. We do not know the security of our families. We do not know how much we're going to pay for rent next year. All these things are basic mistakes due to the fact that we have suffered from stress and suffer from it every day, but quietly decide not to do anything about it. Now, sometime we probably will do something about it. And we remember the case in the work of the philosophers and the work of Giovanni de Boccalini, where the wise men, receiving a great plea from humanity, addressed to the gods pick out the wisest people in heaven and send them down to take care of the earth. So they all appear in some place, a modern equivalent of Athens, where they are going to do great things for the benefit of mankind. And everything they try to do, someone objects to. One of the wise men said, "Let us put windows in the hearts of human beings so that we can see the real motives of each other." Of course, it's symbolical. But some other human being got up and said, if you do that, we can't deceive each other. And if we can't deceive each other, then business can't progress. And if we don't make mistakes, then others will. And if we make mistakes, they will also. But if we put windows in to everybody see everybody's mistakes, no one will believe in anything. Well, that's exactly the state they were in. So they tried one thing another to see if they could find out what to do. And one day, success came by. Oh, it was magnificent. It had a great float as in a parade, accompanied by all kinds of dancers and musicians. And in the float sat success, a magnificent figure, jeweled and crowned, were carrying scepters and surrounded by attendants of magnificent proportions. And one of the wise men just by chance, noticed a little place where there was a gap in the robes of success. So while the pageantry was going by, he lifted up a little bit on the robe. And what was under it? The bones of a skeleton. The success was a skeleton dressed up. And he told the rest of them about it. And they said, oh, that's pretty serious. You can't do much with a world that conceals evil and tries to make it appear to be right rather than to change. So they said, we've got to do something. So they all got together and tried to teach the people something. No luck. So at last they made a special official announcement that the whole thing would be solved by adding 2 cents to the price of cabbage. The thunderous applause was received. Everyone said it's the most noble thought in all the world, that now everything is solved. Everything is perfectly all right. We can all do as we want to if we can be just as nasty, unpleasant, and destructive as we care to be, and we'll pay 2 cents more for cabbage. And this is such a good thought, so wisely put, that the author was strangled to death in Venice as a reward for telling the truth. So we find that the stress is present wherever folly controls conduct. And that is just about everywhere. Now we watch the newspapers a little in the last few days, and there's some pretty nice things being said. There are a lot of people beginning to worry more about some of these problems. But the papers and the commentators and everyone else sort of hesitates for a moment and say, yes, that would be good, but how do we do it? How can we get this to work? Which one of the present principal legislators today should we approach to get support for this? Which one of our educators really wants to see education put on its right basis? How many believe in a dollar that's worth 100 cents? All these things, they're all things that would help. But you try to find the person, and they'll be very hard to find. Whereas you could bring up a whole mass of them shouting with joy for 2 cents added to the price of cabbage. This is the way it is being handled. So the average citizen that trying to live from day to day, not knowing how long his job is going to last, not knowing how long he can trust his doctor, how long he can prevent himself from being involved in some legal dispute or vote for the wrong candidate, how long things will endure as they are before they get so bad that the individual loses everything that he has, including himself. So this causes what is commonly known as stress. Stress is the realization that something is necessary and no one dares to do it. This is the type of thing in which the remedy has to come from a major cataclysm of some kind. And it looks now as though sometime between now and the middle of the 21st century, we're going to see a major change that is going to force this whole change upon us. Because nature, in its infinite wisdom, would rather finally weed out the tyrants and dispose of them than cause or allow the complete collapse of the entire system. Now we have this, therefore, as an environment. We have it giving us the problems of fumes from motor cars. It gives us the problem of narcotics, all these different things, the major mistakes in industry, and all the problems that face us today. How are we going to change all these things? How are we going to take care of agriculture? How are we going to get over poisoning the stock before we chop it up to eat? All these things have to be cared for. But something definite has to be done to force it. There has to be something bigger than a personal feeling. Someone more important than some legislator or some would-be humanitarian who has no influence but perhaps a very good idea. So we must watch for something when it will come that will bring with it the forced change we have to have. Now when this forced change comes, those will probably cry the loudest who deserve it the most. Because if they had not, or someone had not deserved it very badly, we would never have needed it. But having broken all the minor rules of life, we are confronted with major rules that can break us. So we have people worrying about the job, worrying about the world, worrying about religion, worrying about whether the Muslims or the Hindus are going to govern something, worrying about where they live, constantly working for some private cause. The individual worrying that the right to carry a pistol or a machine gun will be taken away from the private citizen. Why the private citizen should own 200 machine guns and rifles in this country is a question. The theory, of course, is that you might need them if there's a big revolution. Well, with a revolution like that and that armament ready, the revolution and the survival become very doubtful. Instead of solving the problem, we arm ourselves against it, and therefore we are constantly in trouble. So here we are with our worry, our stress symbols, our young people not knowing what to do next, laws for everything you can think of, laws for every correction of moral defects that was never corrected before because no one knew how to correct them, and no one knew what the universe really wanted. People didn't care. Most people did not build their morality upon universal law. They built it upon religious congregationalism. They built it on what one church said for them, another church said for something else, one religion said it for Islam, another said it for Buddhism. Each one of these said it a little differently, but no one was really interested in discovering the simple fact that they were all talking about the same thing. Everyone was so frightened of the wording that they didn't stop for a moment to think about the ideas involved. So here we come along down through to the 20th century. And we come now to the little planet that we live on. A little planet in which the air is getting more polluted every day, that the water is no longer fit to drink. All these things are getting worse all the time. Congestion, land and problems, all kinds of employment situations. Even religion and languages are becoming involved. Everything now is becoming more and more acute. And the individual, as a private citizen, did not know what to do. So while this stress is building out in space, tension is building up right here at home in the family. So the world's stress, due to the world doing it badly, is now coming through to family tension, the effect of this conglomerate of pressure on private citizens who have no background, no essential preparation for the responsibility of solving great social problems. There are problem solvers that are very simple. The truth of the matter is, most of our problems have been that we've made solution difficult. When that is not the solution, it's the problem that is difficult. But we haven't thought of it that way. So here we are, with generations of young people growing up without integrities, without morals, with everything based upon the almighty dollar, and we get word coming through the mail any minute now of a new country that has developed nuclear weaponry. All these things we take for granted, and then comes people. Now, people are a very interesting thing. We must study them carefully because we don't know how long we're going to have them. We have to be very careful of people because people are being hurt and disillusioned and destroyed every day. But people are the things that perhaps have the answers, if we would give them a little credit. The average person has never been very rich, and while he might like to be, I don't think he is necessarily willing to sacrifice everything for a few more dollars. The average individual has never had a high esteem for his position. He's done the work of the day. He's lived his life. He's retired on his pension and has departed in due time. Now, these people are being affected very seriously by stress, and it is coming in on them in every way you can imagine. And they are the ones who you might say are the helpless victims of a system. They're not helpless victims because if they weren't partly guilty, they wouldn't be in the trouble. Most of them could have done a little better. Movements like the populist movement and other political systems throughout the world could have done much more if the public had accepted them.
But the public was really not quite willing to accept the idea that 100 cents on a dollar. It's not that honest, that strict. It really wanted other people to be honest, but it didn't want a code that made it honest as a group of people. So we have no correction. But at the same time, the stress and this strife and pressure and tension is building up. It is building up in every area of our society. It is building up at a rate unbelievable in terms of past history. We are having more difficulties and more relapses and more complete failures in the last 100 years than in the preceding 2,000 years. Because now everything is exaggerated. Everything is built up. All thoughts are big, but there's nothing back of them. And these people who are suffering now from the mistakes of their ancestors and their own willingness to accept these mistakes are the ones that are going to have to do something about it in the next century. Well, there's a lot of things they can do about it. One of the things that can possibly, definitely do about it is to correct some of the major, simple problems that face us every day. We've got to make sure that the food is fit to eat. We've got to make sure that the air is fit to breathe. We must be certain that some basic values that upon which survival depends are provided for. We can't keep on having oil spills all the rest of the history. If we do, the history isn't going to be very long. We cannot neglect all these immediate things that are just actual monuments to stupidity and selfishness and can hope to go on. So all these basic, simple things will probably have to be corrected. We're going to have to find out what to do about the narcotics problem and do it. And we're going to find it difficult because we've raised 2 generations at least now of young people who have no sense of moral integrity and therefore are not afraid of narcotics, although they witnessed the complete collapse of integrity under the influence of them. So everything goes along, but it's all visible. We can see what is wrong. We see it every day. We see it in our thoughts. We see it in our newspapers. Our politicians are talking about it. Our educators are trying to do something about it. And the rest of the citizenry is waiting, hopefully, that something will be done about it. But in the meantime, there come strikes, and another nation has the bomb. All of this keeps on, and nothing changes it. Well, nature is not that patient. Nature is very patient, and the laws of cause and effect work. And the principles of integrity work. We give every individual the right and the privilege of correcting his own faults. We give him the opportunity to do it right. If he's doing it wrong, we try to educate him. Nature tries to educate him. After 25 or 50 oil spills, nature has tried to educate something about the petroleum industry. We have plenty of opportunity to learn. But wherever it is disagreeable or contrary to our economic choice, we don't learn. It is the thing that is done honorably that is considered as the objectionable alternative. It's not the thing we should be doing. It's the thing that we should win without doing. Now, all this is also talking down into our personal lives. At the bottom of this chain of circumstances is the world home, the family, young people, all the things that go to make up the simple society which has been ours since the dawn of time. We are therefore in the midst of a time in which the most crucial factors lie in the immediate personal circumstances of people. We are in the presence of time in which moral problems are very serious. We are dealing with problems of abortion. We are dealing with all this type of thing. And we are dealing with all of it with a kind of nonchalance. It doesn't make much difference how it goes, business. And if the justices, the Supreme Court, say it's all right, it's okay. But isn't it all that way? It doesn't make any difference who says it or what they say. It is either true or it's untrue. And if being true, it results in misery, then the misery was necessary. If it was not necessary, then the misery is sham. But we find every day that the problems that we create and face can only be solved by integrity. Now, gradually, however, things get worse in the individual's life. Most people today in so-called civilized nations, which means really that they're not at war at the moment, this type of thing is something they have to think about. They have to go into it a little bit and try and find out how to keep what is good and get rid of what is not good. Now, how are they going to do this? There has to be something that forces this viewpoint upon us. Now, Nostradamus tells us, or intimates very clearly, that in the 21st century, there is going to be a major upheaval. He's been pretty correct on everything he has done, from reading the ancient books of the tribe of Joshua in the old Hebrew distribution. He is of the opinion that there will be a great confrontation that will probably begin before the end of the present century. In the next 10 years, we're liable to see more happen than in the previous 100 years, even though we went through 2 world wars and 2 depressions. In the next 10 years, many things are going to be forced upon us in the form of change. We are confronting political situations like the recent establishment of the sovereignty of Hong Kong. We are dealing with economic changes, as in the relationships between communist and democratic countries. All around there's anything happening. Nation after nation is going to war. Leader after leader is leaving the country with the funds. All these things are part of a tremendous program that is adding up to something. Little by little, we are euchering the situation until a certain pattern is set up. A pattern which can result in a complete overwhelming and overturning of what we call civilization. Well, if we come to deserve it, we have to take it. And it looks very much so we do deserve it. The only thing that we do not deserve is peace. We've never earned it. We do not deserve security. We have never honored it. So we will get what we have earned, but in so doing, there's going to be a lot of headaches. And these lots of headaches are going to come under the form of stress and tension. The stress of the world will bring a result in the tension that descends upon people. Everyone today is tired. Everyone today is uncertain as to what to do. We are uncertain where to put a dollar for security. We are uncertain where to educate our children and what to teach them. We are insecure as to what we believe is religion and what we do not believe is religion. We are insecure in government, in education, in science. We are insecure in medicine. All these things, we are not sure of any of them. Not sure because we've never earned certainty. We've never tried to be certain. All of these things have gradually developed into tremendous rackets, situations existing only for financial gain to somebody and financial loss to somebody else. Now, it would be kind of nice if in these emergencies something could be done to arbitrate these major decisions so that instead of having to pass through another great catastrophe, in which, as Nostradamus seemed to imply, that we would face Asia for the final showdown. But in any event, the fact that these things could be arbitrated, there's no reason why there should be a Third World War. There's no reason why there was a second one or a first one. All these tremendous pressures and circumstances were based upon the concept that people had that you could win a war, which you can't do. So always as the war is lost, and then actually hundreds of pages of history can be produced at any moment to prove that every conqueror and every despot has come to a bad end. But nobody pays any attention. Each one has the discovery or the invention that is going to make that his particular purpose successful. And in the meantime, new generations are growing up. Generations that are being born in periods of instability. The young person of today, growing up in the early teens, has absolutely no basis for building a mature judgment on any subject. Has no way of realizing that there are responsibilities in life that must be accepted. There is no thriving drive into religion to find the truths of faith. There is no particular interest in the moderate, simple way of life. There's no desire to go back to the farm, and if he did go back to the farm, it's probably subdivided into condominiums. Always there's something. The land is now just being destroyed. The trees are being cut down. The rivers are being polluted. The sewage is so bad that even sewage can't stand itself. All these things, and nobody does anything about them. Everyone is helpless. We don't have time, money, or thought to do something about the sewage, because it's much more interesting to see if we can land a projectile on Mars. Maybe the man in the projectile hopes he'll get there, but nothing is being done. Science is doing all these wonderful things. Men are born, men suffer, and men die. The great facts of life have not been considered. So it's either going to have to be considered, or the stress will go on. And we may say that tension and stress are natural symbols for what is wrong. They are the evidence and proof and actual reality of needing the changes that we hope will be accomplished. And everyone who is interested will have to start accomplishing these things in his own family. I heard a case not more than 2 or 3 days ago of a very nice family of people who have a wayward child. And this wayward child is driving them all to destruction. It'd be absolutely a miserable miscarriage of universal justice if the child ever belongs to anything. But the child will succeed, probably become very wealthy, will also have children who will succeed by very wealthy, and then some great flight of planes over the continent will destroy the bank and the stock exchange and leave nothing but debt. So we have all these problems as part of stress. And this stress is being felt now, it's rather ridiculous to say so, that how with all this hanging over, with planes hovering in the air, sewage rotting in the bodies, the grounds, with everything tied up and everything running down, that we should be very worried over such tremendous problems as where to hold the next Olympic Games. But these are the things that happen. We do not pay attention to anything. We suffer when we could be curing things rather than wasting time. Now, most people are fairly busy. But at the same time, most people are wasting more time today than ever before in history. And wasting of time is a misdemeanor. It is something that's going to be held against us. Wasting of time is not fair. To sit in front of some television outlet and watch people do things that are ridiculous, watch them also do things that are immoral and destructive, or wander around in a world of fashions and economics, and live this as life, to realize what has been said, that many, many people spend 6 to 8 hours a day, every day of their lives in front of a television. And yet on the television itself, they're never going to be the answer, because they're going to be very careful to keep that off the air. We're going to get only the same things we've been getting. And people have no time left to do any thinking. If they read, they read things that are not very important. I saw not long ago a list of bestsellers in literature. The very best. They're doing very well. There wasn't one on the list that could contribute anything to the problems that we face today. These things are completely forgotten or ignored because they're painful.